नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तम श्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिके। श्रीमद् भागवतम फर्स्ट कैंटो सेवेंथ चैप्टर टेक्स्ट 11 टेक्स्ट 12 ऑन द बोर्ड इट्स रिटन परीक्षितो अथ राजर्षे जन्म कर्म विलापनम संस्थां च पांडु पुत्रानां वक्षे कृष्ण कथोदयम्। परीक्षितोऽथो राजर्षेर् परीक्षितोऽथ राजर्षेर् जन्म कर्म विलापनम् जन्म कर्म विलापनम् संस्थां च पाण्डुपुत्राणाम् संस्थां च पाण्डुपुत्राणाम् वक्षे कृष्णो कथोदयम् वक्ष ऑफ किंग परीक्षित अथ दस राजर्षे ऑफ द किंग हु वाज द ऋषि अमंग द किंग। जन्म बर्थ कर्म एक्टिविटीज विलापनम deliverance, sangsthan, renunciation of the world, cha, and Pandu Putranam, of the sons of Pandu, Bakshe, I shall speak, Krishna Katha Udayam, that which gives rise to the transcendental narration of Krishna. The Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nation by His Divine Grace. Śrūta Goswami was thus addressed the rishis headed by Shaunaka. Now I shall begin the transcendental narration of the Lord Sri Krishna and topics of His birth, activity and deliverance of King Parikshit, the sage among kings, as well as topic of the renunciation of the worldly order by the sons of Pandu. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Lord Krishna is so kind to the fallen souls that He personally incarnates Himself amongst the different kinds of living entities and takes part with them in daily activities. Any historical fact, old or new, which has a connection with the activities of the Lord is to be understood as a transcendental narration of the Lord. Without Krishna, all the supplementary literatures like the Puranas and Mahabharata are simply stories or historical facts. But with Krishna, they become transcendental, and when we hear of them, we at once become transcendentally related with the Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam is also a Purana. But the special significance of this Purana is that the activities of the Lord are central and not just supplementary historical facts. Srimad Bhagavatam is thus recommended by Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as the spotless Purana. There is a class of less intelligent devotees of the Bhagavat Purana who desire to relish at once the activities of the Lord narrated in the 10th canto without first understanding the primary cantos. They are under the false impression that the other cantos are not concerned with Krishna, and thus, more foolishly than intelligently, they take to the reading of the 10th canto. These readers are specially told herein that the other cantos of the Bhagavatam are as important as the 10th canto. No one should try to go into the matters of the 10th canto without having thoroughly understood the purport of the other 9 cantos. Krishna and his pure devotees, like the Pandavas, are on the same plane. Krishna is not without his devotees of all the rasas, and the pure devotees like the Pandavas are not without Krishna. The devotees and the Lord are interlinked and they cannot be separated. Therefore, talks about them are all Krishna customs or topics of the moon. Parikshitotho Rajarshe Janma Karma Vilapanam Shangsthang Cha Pandu Kustanam Bakshe Krishna Kathodayam. Sutta Goswami thus addressed the Rishi headed by Shaunaka. Now I shall begin the transcendental narration of the Lord Sri Krishna and topics of the birth, activities and deliverance of King Parikshit, the sage among kings, as well as topics of the renunciation of the worldly order by the sons of Pandu. So, Suta Goswami is narrating Srimad Bhagavatam that he heard from his spiritual master, Srila Sukadeva Goswami, to the sages in Nainisharanya. So here, Suta Goswami is telling them that he is going to describe about Krishna's birth and activities, and also the activities and deliverance of King Parikshit. And then finally he described how the Pandavas gave up their household life and entered into renounced order of life. Actually, Pandavas' renunciation was very abrupt and it also ended very quickly. It didn't really last for very long, their renounced order of life. As soon as they heard that Krishna left this planet, they decided to give up everything. And they quickly coronated Parikshit Maharaj, the only successor to the Kuru dynasty. He was just a young boy at that time. But Pandavas felt so heartbroken due to Krishna's disappearance from this planet that they decided to leave everything. Because without Krishna, this whole world became completely vacant to them. As Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also described in the mood of Srimati Radharani, Shunnaitam Jagat Sarvam Govinda Virahena. My dear Govinda, due to your separation, the whole world appears to be completely vacant. So the Pandavas also felt that way, and they felt, what's the use of remaining in this world now? Let's give up our body. Let's first give up everything material, and then let's give up our bodies also, because now there is no need, no use to stay in this world. And they left Hastinapur, which is present Delhi, and they started to walk towards the mountain, towards the Himalayan mountain. And actually Yudhishthir Maharaj decided to do that. Then the other Pandavas also
decided to follow him. Then Draupadi also decided to accompany them. So they started to walk towards the Himalayas without taking any rest, without taking any food, or without taking any drink. They just wanted to walk till their body dropped. And the first one to drop was Draupadi, then Sahadev, then Nakul, then Arjun, and finally Bhima. Bhima actually left his body near Badarik Ashram, which is high up in the Himalayan mountain, and which must be about 300 to 400 kilometers from Delhi. More than that, it's about 500 to 600 kilometers. And also, it's a very arduous journey through the mountains. And you must remember that there was no tracks or no path those days. They were just walking up to the Himalayan, up to the Himalayan mountain. And then finally for Yudhishthira Maharaj, after Bhima fell, the chariot came from the heavenly planet to take Yudhishthira Maharaj. So this is how the Pandavas renounced their worldly order. And then Parikshit Maharaj became the king, and Suta Goswami is giving the summary of what he is going to talk about to the sages. And here Prabhupada pointed out that this is actually the order of approaching Srimad Bhagavatam. We must first understand the activities of Krishna's devotees. We must first get acquainted to the devotees of Krishna, different incarnations of Krishna. And then we can approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. There is a gradual elevation to approach Krishna. One cannot jump straight to Krishna. That can be very, very dangerous. So Srimad Bhagavatam has been designed in such a way that one could gradually come up to understanding Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And not only Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, also has three aspects of his pastimes. Krishna's Dwarka pastimes, Krishna's Mathura pastimes, and Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. Krishna's Dwarka pastimes are complete. Krishna's Mathura pastimes are more complete. And Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes are most complete. The most perfect pastimes, the most perfect activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are the activities that he performs in Golok Vrindavan. And the problem in approaching Krishna's pastimes in Golok Vrindavan is that Krishna's pastimes in Golok Vrindavan are very much like the activities in this material nature. In Vaikuntha, Krishna's pastimes are full of awe and reverence. Therefore, when one approaches Krishna in Vaikuntha or Narayan Vasudev in Vaikuntha, then one naturally develops awe and reverence towards him. Because they see how those who are surrounding him are dealing with him, how his associates surrounding him are dealing with him, and how Krishna also is dealing with them. But Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes are just like the dealings between ordinary human beings. In one sense, we can say Krishna's Vaikuntha pastimes are like the activities of the demigod. But Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes are the activities of life, of activities like that of human beings. Krishna's form also in Vrindavan is two arms, like a human being. Krishnero jateko khela, tar moddhe naro lila, naro boku taharo shori. Of all the activities of Krishna, the most wonderful are the activities in his human life. Because his human-like form is the most elevated, highest of all his different forms. Because this Narobopu, this human-like form, is his original form, Swarup. Krishna's original form is like this two-armed form. And when it is said that a man has been created according to the image of God, it is a very clear understanding, it's a very perfect understanding. Man's form is like the original form of the Supreme Personality of God. And Vrindavan is very much like this earth planet. Actually, this earth planet is a perverted reflection of Golok Vrindavan. And Krishna's activities in Golok, the activities of a human being is also like a perverted reflection of Krishna's activities in Golok. Therefore, when a human being reads Krishna's pastimes, he runs a great risk of mistaking those activities to be like the activities between some ordinary human being. Especially Krishna's activities with the gopis in Vrindavan may appear to be like the activity of a man with his lover. Therefore, it is very important that one first of all understands who Krishna is. First of all, one must understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then one must understand how Krishna's devotees approach him, how Krishna's devotees deal with him. And then only he may become qualified to approach Krishna. Otherwise, one may try to approach Krishna just as he approaches any other human being, or he may very unfortunately mistake Krishna to be an ordinary person. Therefore, Vasudeva presented Srimad Bhagavatam in a very systematic way. First, he described how creation of this material nature, and then how Krishna is behind the creation. And then he described about different activities of Krishna's different pastimes. And then he described, along with that, he describes the activities of different devotees of Krishna. And then in the ninth canto, he describes the activities of Lord Ramchandra. Now, Lord Ramchandra's activities, although are performed and perceived in awe and reverence, but the awe and reverence has become very, very close to us. Like, well, first of all, Ramchandra's appearance, Ramchandra also has two arms, unlike Narayan in Vaikuntha. Although Ramchandra's activities are like that of Narayan in Vaikuntha, but still it is very much human-like. Like we see Ramchandra as a human being, his appearance is like that of a human being. Then his activities are also very human-like. He gave up his kingdom to fulfill the promise of his father. Then he left his kingdom and went to the forest. And his wife also, his very chaste wife, Sita Devi, also accompanied him. And also did his very intimate young brother, Lakshman. Then they went to the forest, and there Sita was kidnapped by Ravana. And then we see Lord Ramchandra is lamenting about Sita's loss, just like an ordinary human being. Not only just like an ordinary human being, I would rather say a very sentimentally attached human being. And then he fought with Ramchandra with the help of the monkeys. He fought with Ravan with the help of the monkeys, and he built a bridge across the river to go across, built a bridge across the ocean to go to Lanka. So this way, Ramchandra did perform many wonderful pastimes, although apparently they appear to be like that of a human being. No human being can build a bridge across the ocean. No human being can defeat a very powerful demoniac king like Ravana, who actually defeated all the demigods. Actually, all the demigods were completely subordinate, submissive to Ravana. He was so powerful. And that also he did with the help of the monkeys. Group of monkeys without any weapons. Those monkeys didn't even have any weapons. Their only weapons were their fists and rocks and mountain sticks. They were just throwing rocks. But they were so powerful, they were actually empowered by the Supreme Personality. So this is the potency of the Supreme Personality of God. If he wants, he can empower even an ant to kill the most powerful person in this world. What to speak of the monkeys? And actually those monkeys were demigods, took birth in the form of monkeys, in order to participate in Lord Ramchandra's pastime. So through Ramchandra's pastimes, we come very close to Krishna. Ramchandra is also like a human being, but at the same time we can see that his activities are full of awe and reverence. His activities are awe-inspiring. And then we get to see Krishna. And then when you approach Krishna, we have a fair understanding about the Supreme Personality. That's why Vyasadeva presented it in a very, very systematic way. It has been described that the 12 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam are actually 12 different parts of the body of the Supreme Personality of God. The first two cantos, first and second cantos, are the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. Then, third and fourth canto are his thighs. Fifth canto is his abdomen. Sixth canto is his chest. Seventh and eighth cantos are his two arms. The ninth canto is his neck. Then the tenth canto is his lotus-like smiling face. Then 11th canto is his forehead, and the 12th canto is his head. So this way, in this way, these 12 cantos are symbolizing 12 different limbs of the body of Indra. Now the 10th canto is the face of the Supreme Personality. And the face is the part that actually identifies the person. If we want to see a person, we generally look at his face, or from looking at one's face, we can recognize the person. So Krishna's face is the 10th canto. His most intimate activities are actually described in the 10th canto. Therefore, without proper understanding, if one approaches the 10th canto, then he may commit a very great mistake. Especially Rasa Panchadvai, the five chapters that describe the Rasa Leela pastimes of the Supreme Lord, from 31st to 36th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because there Krishna's dealings with his most intimate associates, the gopis and the gopis of Vrindavan, have been described. And the danger is that a person without properly understanding Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, if tries to enter into those pastimes of Krishna, then he may become afflicted with sex desire. He may mistake Krishna's activities with the gopis of Vrindavan is some sexual deal. And that is the worst offense that one can actually commit. The spiritual sky is devoid of sex desire. Actually, sex desire is a purely material phenomenon. And actually, sex desire is a bondage for a living entity in this material nature. As long as one has sex desire, he can never get out of this material. Therefore, this material nature is described as Maithuna Garo, a prison house of sex desire. Just as one is tied down in a prison by chains, similarly, in the prison house of this material nature, everyone is tied down by sex desire. It's a subtle chain, which has been sometimes described as Hridaya Granthi. This chain is actually in the heart, and it's a very tight knot with which our heart is tied down to. And as we can see how every single spiritualist first of all became free from sex desire, then only they became qualified to enter into spirituality. For example, we can see Sukadeva Goswami. Right after his birth, he left home. And his father, Vasudev, was running after him, calling him to bring him back. And at that time, celestial damsels were taking bath in a lake. And when they saw Sukadeva Goswami, although at that time Sukadeva Goswami was about 15 years old, and he was stark naked. But they didn't feel perturbed. They didn't feel ashamed. So that's the indication that Sukadeva Goswami, there was no sex desire in the heart of Sukadeva Goswami. Because if he had, then these ladies would have felt ashamed, embarrassed to be naked in front of him. But Sukadeva Goswami was completely unperturbed, and the ladies also felt completely safe, although there was a young man, naked young man, walking by. And that Sukadeva Goswami, who was completely free from sex desire from before his birth, he is speaking about Srimad Bhagavatam. And he is describing about the 10th canto, Krishna's pastimes in Golokvrindavan. Now, if Krishna's activities with the gopis were a matter of ordinary sex life, then obviously Sukadeva Goswami would not have spoken about that. When he himself is completely free from sex desire, why should he narrate the sex life of somebody else? So here we have to understand that the activities of Krishna in Golok Vrindavan is the diametrically opposed to what sex life is in the material. That's what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami mentioned that Atmendriya Priti Bancha Tare Boli Kam, Krishnendriya Priti Icha Bhare Premna, Atoeva Kam Preme Bohuto Antar Kam Andhutamo Prem Nirmal Bhashkar. The desire to gratify our own senses is called lust, kam. And the desire to give pleasure to Krishna's senses is called prema. Therefore, there is a great difference between kam and prema. Kam and prema, lust and love, are two diametrically opposite things. They are diametrically opposed. Kam preme bohuto antar. And just like kam is like a piece of iron, and prem is like gold. Kam is the deepest darkness, and prem is the brilliant sun. Kam andhatamo prem nirmal. Lust is deepest darkness, whereas love is brilliant as the sun. Now when a man becomes involved in lusty affairs, then he plunges into the deepest darkness of andhatamo, in the deepest darkness of ignorance. We can see people, those who are very attached to sex life, they are completely in the mode of ignorance. Whereas prem, love for Krishna, is brilliant as the sun. As one becomes attracted to Krishna, he becomes more and more enlightened. More and more he transcends the ignorance of this material. Therefore, it is very important that before one approaches the 10th canto, he must thoroughly understand who Krishna is. Therefore, in all the Puranas, in the very beginning, the creation has been described. All the Purans, the first chapters describe about creation. In Srimad Bhagavatam also, we see the first two cantos are dealing with creation. And in this way, we can understand how this material nature is the creation of the Supreme Personality of God. And then we understand the opulence of the Supreme Personality of God. So when one thoroughly studied the first two cantos, first canto and second canto, he naturally becomes submissive to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, recognizing his opulence. And then he becomes qualified to go further. And then he sees the Supreme Personality of Godhead, his wonderful incarnation, and how his devotees are dealing with him. In the very beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, towards the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, we get to hear the stories of Dhruva Maharaj, Prachetas, Prahlad Maharaj. And in this way, we understand how a devotee approaches the Supreme Personality of God. And then following their footsteps, we learn to approach Krishna. Otherwise, if we just jump onto the 10th canto thinking, oh, these stories are quite exciting, then it is synonymous to drinking poison. If we approach Krishna's activities in Vrindavan with proper understanding, then all the impurities of our heart become purified. Actually, the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, especially the Rasa Panchadhai, the five chapters of 10th canto describing Krishna's Rasa Lila pastimes, are the most potent medicine to cure one of his material attachment, which means sex desire. But medicine, if improperly taken, can act as a poison. Actually, every medicine is poison. But when it is administered to a patient by a qualified doctor, can haphazardly, without proper prescription, then that will be the cause of death. Similarly, the 10th canto is nectar, but if it is taken improperly, may act as poison. So that has been warned by Srila Prabhupada in this purport, that how one must approach Srimad Bhagavatam step by step under the direction of a bona fide spiritual guide. It's very important that Srimad Bhagavatam, or not only Srimad Bhagavatam, all the Vedic scriptures are studied under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual. That's why it has been mentioned in the Manu Samhita that one should not even touch the scriptures unless he is a Brahmana. A non-Brahmana should not even touch the Vedic scriptures. And you know what injunction has been given in Manu Samhita? For one who touches or tries to read the scriptures without the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, without being a Brahmana, and if a non-Brahmana reads the Vedic scriptures, then what should be done to him? Manu Samhita actually gives the instruction. No. Molten lead should be poured into his ears. I mean, apparently it appears to be a very heavy statement. But what does it mean? It means that unless and until one has become twice born, when does one receive his second birth? When one is duly initiated by a spiritual. Actually, by birth, everyone is a sudra. But when one becomes duly initiated by a bona fide spiritual master, then he becomes Dvija, a twice born. So, the instruction is that everybody must study scriptures under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master. Lord Ramchandra also, there was a sudra who was studying the Vedas. That means a person who didn't have a bona fide spiritual master, who did not surrender to a bona fide spiritual master, but he was reading So Ramchandra went and killed him. He's a shooter.
So in this way, the Vedas were very strict that a person does not study the scriptures without the guidance of the spirit. It is a spirit because it's a very subtle subject. Not only subtle, it's actually a transcendental subject. And the transcendental subject matter cannot be understood unless it has been clarified by a qualified teacher.
And the qualified teacher is the bona fide spiritual.
And when one studies the scriptures under the direction of a bona fide spiritual master, then the meaning becomes crystal clear. And also we have to understand that the meaning doesn't become crystal clear by our intellectual perception. Divya gyan ride prakashita. Transcendental knowledge is revealed within the heart. So as one approaches the bona fide spiritual master, then the transcendental knowledge is revealed. So the Vedic wisdom becomes revealed in the heart. There are incidences, or there are narrations in Mahabharata, how individual disciples have been blessed by the spiritual master. Let all the knowledge, let all the Vedas reveal in your heart. Let all the Vedas be revealed in your heart. And as the result of that blessing, the Vedas were revealed. Of course, they were very special disciples. But for us, a very special spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, has revealed the Vedas in a very wonderful way in the form of his Bhakti Vedanta. And if we approach these literatures, these transcendental literatures, following the footsteps and following the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, they'll also be revealed in our soul. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any comment or question? What Prabhupada did in Krishna book, he actually translated the text and then he gave his text. So the stories are there along with his text. And Prabhupada actually explained it in such a wonderful way that even a neophyte reader, even a novice can understand. Yes, actually a bona fide spiritual master or a Jagat Guru like Srila Prabhupada. Yes, actually a bona fide spiritual master or a Jagat Guru like Srila Prabhupada can do things like that.
But as I said, like he presented it with the culture. Like when we read Krishna books, we do not really feel any agitation because Prabhupada presented it in such a sublime way. Along, and Prabhupada also, time and time again, he's explaining Jesus Christ. They are not separate, but they are kind of intermingled with the text. But they read, you know, they read very loosely. Also, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he also presented direct Radha Krishna. Actually, what Prabhupada did was just following the footsteps of Chaitanya. For this age, the Supreme Personality of Godhead has given the most potent medicine for the worst patient. In the age of Kali, the living entities are the worst patient. And there was no other medicine would work. Therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave them directly Radha Krishna. Hare Krishna Mahamantra is non-different. And when that Mahamantra is revealed, you know, Radha Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. So Mahaprabhu made some special adjustments for this age. But we can see by reading Krishna books, well, people become brahmacharis. That's the potency of a bona fide spiritual master's presentation. Whereas when these Bhagavad reciters recite the 10th canto, especially Rasa Panchadhari, after their recitation, they go and indulge in all kinds of nonsense. Whereas Prabhupada, reading Krishna books, people become devotees. How did the Pandavas tolerate their dear wife Draupadi dropping down? And they couldn't care, they carried on. That shows how detached they became. They didn't have, they were so attached to Krishna. I mean, their only attachment was to Krishna. So when Krishna was gone, they were not interested in anything else. Not even their wife, who was the most beautiful woman ever. She dropped dead, but they kept him. They didn't even look back who was talking or not. Actually, that's also another consideration. They're walking with Yudhishthir in the front. Then Bhima, then Arjuna, then Nakul, then Sahadev, then Draupadi. So when Draupadi dropped, they didn't even get to know about it. That shows that they were completely absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. They didn't have any answer. Nothing was pulling them from behind. They were just going forward. Krishna's Dwarka pastime or Hastinapur pastime or Kurukshetra pastime are actually Vaikuntha pastimes. So the Pandavas were actually related to Krishna as in awe and reverence. In their eyes, he was Vasudev, he was Narayan. Pandavas were not aware of Krishna's Vrindavan path. Or even if they were aware, they felt that they could understand. So Vrindavan pastimes is very special, like it's beyond awe and reverence. It's a pure and those like all the Pandavas were friends of Krishna. But that friendship was not the friendship of Vrindavan. That was the friendship of Hastinapur and Dwarka. And that friendship was mixed with, is based on awe and reverence. But say for example, Krishna's friendship with Subal or Sudam or Vasudam is different. Even Krishna's friendship with Uddhava is different from his friendship with Arjuna. That's it. Yeah. Yeah. The question is, then how could they engage Krishna as their servant? They did not engage Krishna as their servant. Krishna volunteered to become their servant. And then they accepted him. Krishna said, I'll become your chaplain. I'll become your messenger. Not that they said, Krishna, just you become my messenger. But in Vrindavan, Subal and Sudam, they say that. Krishna, can you climb up the tree and get that flower for me? Or Krishna, they ride on Krishna's back. They wrestle with Krishna. The condition is whoever is the loser in a wrestling bout must carry the winner. So sometimes Krishna is defeated by his friend in the wrestling bout. And then Krishna carries the friend on his back. So that kind of exchange was never there. Not even with him. And they all had that awareness that he is the Supreme. He is not. But fortunately, he is alive and he is with him. Yes. 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 The question is then, how come after seeing the universal form in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, I'm sorry, 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjun became perturbed if he had a relationship with God? Yeah. Arjun's relationship is with awe and reverence in Vaikuntha mood, but universal form is actually a material manifestation of the Supreme. Like the creation, destruction, all these affairs are material affairs. So Arjun could not tolerate that such a awesome appearance of the Supreme. Different living entities are being crushed by his feet, between his feet. And different demigods are performing their activities as different limbs of his body. So Prabhupada explained that the universal form of the Lord is actually temporal. It's relative to this material. Yeah. You see, Krishna, although Krishna of Dwarka is in a Vaikuntha mood, but Krishna in Dwarka is higher than Poram Narayana. So, fortunately, Arjun had his relationship with Krishna in Dwarka. Therefore, he would not settle for anything less than that. What to speak of universal form, not even forearm form. He just wanted to see his two arms. But he thought that this two arm form actually is a incarnation of the four-handed form. He thought that two arm form was lesser than four arm, who actually came closer to him. But as Narayan, he could not approach him. Yeah, the question is, in Vrindavan, you said that in Vrindavan there is no awareness of God, then how come Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda Mai are worshipping Vishnu, and how do they relate to this Krishna? Actually, they don't think that Krishna is Vishnu. They think Krishna is Vishnu. And they don't have awareness of God. It's not, it will be wrong to say that, because this, their awareness of Krishna is beyond the region of ignorance. If in the material nature we are in ignorance, then the spiritual nature is full of knowledge. Now, transcending the region of knowledge, they came to this. So that is not a region of ignorance, not a region of forgetfulness as the living entities have in the material nature. It is transcendental to the transcendent. So it is beyond our intellectual. How the devotees of Vrindavan feel about Krishna is totally different. Yeah, Jagannath is Vasudev Krishna who is hankering to go to him, who is hankering to be associated with his devotee. So although he is Vasudev, but his mood is Vrindavan. Therefore Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the mood of Radharani, saw Jagannath as Krishna. Krishna who somehow or other ended up in Dwarka and became a king. So now let's take him back. Devotees are compassionate. Yes, when a devotee sees that someone is in distress, he should help. But then another consideration is that if there is service, and if taking care of these distressed people is a hindrance to our service, then yes, they can be forgotten. Well, it depends. You know, like, for example, he may take care of that person, and when the other people gather around, then he can hand them over, hand her over to them, and plus pass a few books to them. Yes. Yeah, right. Okay, fine. If the men are walking on Mahaprasthan to give up their body, they have completely given up all their material attachments and are walking towards the Mount Himalayan mountain to give up their body, then they can do that, not otherwise. And when you go out on Harinam, I don't know how they do it here, but usually the system is laid behind the ladies there and men, so that someone can have a lady. Anyway, if it is not done, it should be done. Or not only two, there should be three, four different ladies. Men, they should be given protection. That's their duty. Yes. Anyway, we just discussed that. The question is whether, it is the devotee's, attraction or attachment to the Lord that makes the Lord appear to him. Jar jei rosh hoy sei sarbottom totostho hoya bicharile ache tar. Whatever is one's own mellow, that is the highest. He considers that to be the highest, and accordingly the Lord appears to him. But when we make a marginal consideration, then there is some difference. Like a person in, say, dasara, in the mellow of servitorship, he thinks that to be the servant of the Lord is the highest. And the Lord also appears to him as the master, as his master, and allows him to render service. Similarly, with Vatsalya, with Satya, with Madhya. Now, you know, individually every devotee thinks that his mellow is the highest. But when we consider from a margin, totastho hoya vicharile, when we make a marginal consideration, from the standing on the margin, if we make a survey,
then we can observe that Shakha is higher than Vatsya, Vatsala is higher than Shakha, and Madhurya is higher than Vatsya. And the Lord appears to the devotee according to his name, according to the devotee's name. Like when Mother Jasoda sees Krishna, she sees Krishna as a little old son. But when the gopis see Krishna, even though Krishna may be a little child, the gopis see Krishna as their lover, 16-year-old boy. And Krishna cannot hide himself. Even in his childhood, when Krishna was playing the pastimes of a little boy, when he came across the gopis, then he couldn't remain in that form. He actually became a 16-year-old young boy. Krishna's pastime in Vrindavan is Vasudev Krishna, outside of Krishna. Like, another example is that in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a very vivid description how the gopis felt when they met Krishna in Kurukshetra during the solar eclipse. The gopis are telling that, I don't want to see you in this way. You are dressed up like a king, you are surrounded by so many noble people, and soldiers, and you know, riding on chariots, there are so many people around, there is the horses and elephants, it's such a big noise, you don't want to see like this. And they just took Krishna away from them because they didn't want to see Krishna anymore. They wanted to see Krishna as the power of God. And Krishna also manifests himself according to the way the devotees want to see. Yes. What argument can I give? Well, first of all, argument is not going to convince you. It's the understanding that will. It's the proper approach to the scriptures and proper approach to the acharyas. Anyway, I can mention from the acharyas what they say to prove that Krishna. Jiva Goswami is presenting it as there are five different relationships, five different favorable relationships: neutrality, servitorship, friendship, parental, and conjugal. The preceding one is more. Is preceding one is higher than the preceding one. Like, servitorship is higher than neutrality. For example, you may know someone, you see that the person goes to the office from the neighborhood, goes to the market, but you don't know him. You know that he exists, but you don't actually have any relationship with him. The relationship that you have with your servant is higher than the relationship that you have with that man, who you know lives in the neighborhood, but do not really know him. Then the relationship that you have with your friend is higher than the relationship with your servant. Your friend is closer to you than your servant. Then the relationship you have with your parents is more intimate than with your friend. And the relationship that you have, that one has with his girlfriend or wife, is even more intimate than with the parents. So in this way, it is established that the relationship, the conjugal relationship, the relationship between husband and wife or lovers is the highest. Now, let us look for these relationships with Krishna. Because everything comes from Krishna. Now, when we go to Vaikuntha, looking for this relationship, we find neutrality and servitude. Mostly servitude. Little bit of neutrality. Neutrality is not actually positive, it's neutral. It's neither positive nor negative. But looking for positive relationship, we go to Vaikuntha and we find we find servitorship. But there's no friendship in Vaikuntha. In Vaikuntha, Narayan doesn't have a friend, or no one is a friend of Narayan. Because of awe and reverence doesn't allow one to come to the equal footing with Narayan. But then, looking for friendship, we come to Ayodhya. Although in Ayodhya also, the predominant mood is servitorship. But Hanuman is, when asked by Ramchandra, Hanuman, what do you want? Then Hanuman is saying, my Lord, if you so desire, then please give me a kingdom. So here, servitorship is merging into friendship. But still, this friendship is not complete. Just a little bit of touch of some friendship with, say, Hanuman, with Guhak, etc. But then, looking for, you know, more developed friendship, we come to Dwarka. There we find the friendship that Krishna has with Uddhava, or Krishna has with Arjuna, is more complete. But still, in Dwarka, we don't find parental love. There, Vasudev and Devaki and Rohini, they all know that this Vasudev is actually Krishna. Therefore, their parental affection has become covered over by awe and reverence. Then looking for parental love, we come to Mathura, where we find that Krishna is just born and Devaki and Vasudev's heart was filled with affection, parental affection. But then also, when Krishna showed his four-armed form, Krishna showed his opulence as Narayan, their parental affection turned into awe and reverence. Then looking for complete perfection of parental love, we come to Vrindavan. And there we see the parental affection that Yashoda and Nanda have for Krishna is perfect. The perfect parental affection. And what to speak of only parental, even conjugal relationship has been perfected there. And all the relationships have displayed their perfect, have been displayed in a perfect way in Vrindavan. So, if mellow is the consideration, if mellow is the yardstick, then measuring by that,
we come to Vrindavan and see the perfection of all mellows are there in Vrindavan. And that's why Krishna of Vrindavan, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is the Aradha Bhagavan, is the worshipping. There are other considerations also, I just mentioned. Anyway, that age does not matter. When Krishna dances rasa with the gopis, whatever their age is, the gopis become fully youthful and Krishna becomes Navakishore, also youthful. But from that consideration, at that time Krishna was 8 years old when he danced. I think the question is, here in the purport it said that Krishna incarnates among different types of living entities. Different types of different kinds of living entities and relates with them. So does it mean that when Lord appeared as Nrisimhadev, he had special dealings with lions or boars? Well, Nrisimhadev is not exactly lion, he's half man, half lion. So, but at the same time I heard that in Ahobalam in South India, that Nrisimha temple in the deep forest, that place has Singhachalam. In Singhachalam mountain, there are lions around that cave. And so about Varahadev, I don't know, but since Prabhupada is saying the boars also must have been aware of him and they got a chance to have a special dealing with him. Yeah, I'll stop now. Thank you all very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.